Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 350.
This week on the podcast, the White House, having finally caught coronavirus, has devoted themselves to becoming the number one disease vector in America.
And New York could single-handedly save the United States Postal Service with their Byzantine primary ballot strategy, if they even have the primary at all.
Plus, your favorite and least favorite Tara Reads are back in the news this week.
Hey, how's that employer-sponsored healthcare going for you now?
Plus, we know that you've got a lot of time on your hands, but 30 minutes of plandemic is definitely a bridge too far.
And friend of the podcast, Grant Sloss, is back.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
And as promised, we have special guest slash friend of the podcast slash our most frequent guest, Grant Sloss, with us today on the Zoom.
Welcome.
Hello, quarantined Americans. I
He's here to give his address.
I didn't know I was the Tom Hanks of Brain Trust Live. That feels really good. My jacket's in the mail.
Yeah. So, obviously, we've been using the podcast mostly to just expel all of our rage at the political circumstance that we find ourselves in. So, you might find this a cathartic experience. You might find this a horrifying experience. Feel free to rage with us.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
We're starting with news that I'm sure if you're a person who enjoys comedy and or irony, you have been following, which is that the White House has this sort of like slow breaking COVID pandemic. I mean, is becoming a slow breaking COVID hotspot. And over the course of the week, multiple people who are getting increasingly closer to the president and vice president have tested positive. So this is the week that Trump was going to do like a nationwide tour where he, I guess, gave everyone COVID unknowingly because he has been participating in acts of irony, like not wearing a mask at a mask facility. Because he toured a Honeywell mask manufacturing facility on Tuesday and delivered like a 20-minute speech, and everyone is literally in there, like seated 6 feet apart in masks. And I guess he said that that an executive there told him he didn't have to wear a mask, but like there are signs visible in photos of him requiring everyone in the vicinity to wear a mask.
And I think that he said that he had been wearing a mask backstage, but then took it off when they told him that he could. So it's like at one point in the mask factory, he was doing it right. And then he was like, this doesn't feel like it.
Doesn't feel like it. Well, and the best part is that they, as he was touring, they played Live and Let Die by Guns N' Roses.
Who is producing this episode of whatever simulation we're living in? Because fire them.
This is from the reality TV president. He could have done better. Like, he's a man who knows how to produce a special.
Yeah.
You know? This, in some ways, was up to the quality of some of his speeches in just, like, bizarre moments of irony. So I guess there's that. He's also been giving people test kits as gifts when he goes and meets with people. So he went and met, he did, like, a round table with Native Americans earlier in the week and gave them a bunch of rapid test kits as a gift.
And listen, Native Americans don't need me to tell them this, but if a white man comes offering gifts, run away. Especially this one. Like, it's not going to end well.
Oh, man.
He also said that he would send one to Joe Biden so he could resume campaigning. Which I think also illustrates his lack of understanding of what the purpose of testing people is. Because the problem is not Joe Biden giving everyone coronavirus. We know he's been quarantining because we haven't seen or heard from him in months.
He's missing.
He's missing in action. The problem is other people giving him coronavirus.
Right.
Like, once you've tested positive, it's too late.
Listen, we didn't need, like, another reference point for Trump not understanding testing. Like, he's proven that 100,000 times already.
The man is not a scientist.
Yeah. Well, that was when he was talking about Katie Miller, right?
Right.
When he was like, she'd been testing really good, as if she'd been, like, you know, like,
acing
the test, you know, until yesterday when she didn't. When everybody was like, yeah, that's what we're all doing here. You don't have coronavirus until you do, and then you do.
It's too late.
Does he think that the test was a prophylactic to catching it?
Right.
He doesn't know what prophylactic is. Excuse me.
No, don't make this more complicated.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
This is, of course, the week he spent all week trying to disband the coronavirus task force, and then decided they were popular, so he didn't want to because people on Twitter, his primary news source, expressed outrage at the idea that we would be disbanding the coronavirus task force because everyone, because they're so popular, everyone loves them so much.
But I mean, he only wanted to disband it because he wanted to be able to say, this is over. There's no coronavirus task force. Ergo, there's no coronavirus.
Exactly.
Right. He would be a genius if he wasn't so fucking stupid.
And that's right. That's why he was at the Honeywell factory. And that's why Mike Pence was going to Iowa. Because when Mike Pence was going there, and that's where he found out that it was his press secretary that had tested positive. She wasn't there. But they basically like held up the plane on the tarmac. He was going because to honor all of the, to the fact that they, all the people at the meat processing plants have like gone back to work. As if they weren't forced to go back to work.
Due to federal policy of demanding that all without giving them any protective equipment, that all meatpacking plants stay in, or meat processing plants stay in business. That caused the celebration, quote unquote, by demanding that sick people return to work, basically.
Yeah. That's exactly what they did.
And then celebrated with no masks together.
I also think Pence flew to Iowa to maybe kill Chuck Grassley because he got off a plane that was held due to someone testing positive and then got off and greeted 200-year-old Senator Chuck Grassley with no PPE at all.
Well, to be fair, Trump on Friday, after hearing... So on Thursday, his one of his valets tests positive. Those are literally the people that handle his food, by the way. They're like the people that bring him his food. And then on Friday, they find out that Katie Miller tests positive. Half of the coronavirus task force is suddenly self-quarantining. Ivanka Trump's personal assistant tests positive. And then Trump, like, in that same day, went and met with a bunch, with like a World War II veterans group.
Oh, right. Like, also without a mask.
Without a mask in their 90s.
And then said the wind was blowing in the right direction, that it would have never gotten to them.
Well, and they asked him why, and he also pointed at the photographer. Like, the photographer had ordered him not to wear a mask. Like, a photographer is empowered to order the President of the United States to take his mask off.
Oh, my God. I didn't hear the wind. I didn't hear about that wind comment before.
It's a very convenient wind.
And now we're just stuck in that bad M. Night Shyamalan movie that nobody saw. Do you remember The Happening, I think?
The Happening?
Oh, yes, The Happening. Yeah, we're living The Happening. Yeah.
I don't even remember what was carrying the toxic thing. But
here's the thing. No one does.
I just remember them like walking down the road and then the wind changed and they had to walk away.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
The invisible enemy strikes again.
I feel like the one that has been the most sort of concerning is the Katie Miller one, A, because she's Stephen Miller's wife.
Which, I've told you my theory about Katie Miller, have I not?
No.
Oh God. Okay.
Please do.
Listen, first, Katie Miller, welcome to the resistance. I feel like you don't marry Stephen Miller unless there's some sort of ulterior motive, and it seems that her ulterior motive was to get inside the West Wing with a virus, and she succeeded, and we should applaud her. It's a very long con, and I don't know who's in charge of it, but well done.
If anyone.
Yeah, but well done, Katie Miller. You did it.
Finally... Well, and she's also, like, so obviously she was testing off the charts, wonderful, up until Friday.
Right, A+.
Flying colors.
But as recently as Thursday, she was, like, at press events with Pence where she was, like, talking to groups of reporters with no mask on. And the reporters, there are pictures of her with no mask. And the reporters around her all have masks on. So everyone's aware of what's going on. So, as we know, the masks protect other people and not you. So she just didn't care about giving coronavirus to
just
the entire press
corps. Just a fire hydrant of coronavirus.
Right.
And the Trump administration not caring about giving coronavirus to the press, that
tracks.
Those numbers crunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Pence is claiming that he's social distancing for the weekend. That fucker has coronavirus.
You mean like the rest of us have been doing for 8 weeks, fucking asshole? I mean, God.
Well, we skipped over it, but Dr. Fauci is now quarantined, as is the head of the CDC and who is it? The head of the NIH or something? I mean, the members or the head of the FDA. Stephen Hahn, the head of the FDA, the head of the CDC, Robert Redfield, and Anthony Fauci are all self-quarantined because of their own contact.
Yeah, they're going to have to end the task force because that they
can't leave their houses.
Right. Well, although Fauci is doing a modified quarantine, which I don't really think is a thing. Actually.
It's not. And also, just call it a quarantine and continue to take your phone calls.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. There's no reason to keep giving...
When
other people aren't there.
That, first of all, continue calling that a quarantine for clarity. Because Americans are already confused enough about what they're supposed to be doing. Inventing modified self-quarantine as a concept is not... Yeah. That's like,
I would like to modify my quarantine.
I would like to modify mine so that I can do whatever I want and everyone else stays quarantined.
Well, a lot of people are doing that, so we could also just choose to do that as opposed
to. That's true. I would prefer that I be the only one modifying it, though.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Moving on to the story that has brought Brent the most accidental joy of the day.
I can't stop laughing about this. I might laugh at an inappropriate time when we're talking about something totally horrible later in the podcast, just because I will have rethought about this.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about the New York primary election off and on for the entire time that we've been on quarantine. It has led to some of our two-hour podcasts that we've had. Rage over
some of
this.
Our rage.
Iconic two-hour podcasts.
Iconic.
Exactly. Right. So this week we found out that the New York primary elections are back on for now. Anyway.
For now. Right. A U.S. District Court judge ruled that in response to the Andrew Yang suit, ruled that you can't just fucking cancel an election because you're too lazy to figure out how to do it safely. Basically.
Why did that need a court ruling to know that is beyond
I mean,
there.
She literally had to say, like, you know, first of all, she had to say, remind them that New York is the only state that is trying to cancel their primary.
Right.
So, like, other states somehow are successfully doing this. And then also, she had to teach everyone how primaries work, especially in New York State. And I didn't realize this. Apparently, it's not in every state where you have to petition to get people on the ballot. I had thought it was. I was wrong. In some states, you just pay your way onto the ballot. In some states, you just sign up.
In real America, you pay your way onto the ballot.
In real America, in real America, in South Carolina, it costs $20,000 to get a seat, to get a place on the ballot. It cost $1,000 in New Hampshire, for comparison. And the average, I think, is probably like $2,000 to $5,000. It's like four times what every other state charges in South Carolina. Thoughts on that later. In any case, I had always thought that everyone understood that people have to petition to get on the ballot and didn't understand why everyone was so flippant about this New York thing as if it was just about the people on the ballot instead of a contract that was broken with the voters themselves. But the judge seemed to agree with me because the judge was basically like, you're voting for delegates to represent your interests at a convention. You're not voting for the candidate. So, like, you are actually violating people's First Amendment rights if you don't let them vote in an election that allows them to, you know, have their views represented in a place. So everyone was excited, except for the Board of Elections and Trish James, the Attorney General, who are filing an appeal because that's what they've chosen to spend New York State's tax dollars on instead of figuring out how to do this primary safely. Like,
they really care about this a lot.
They want to cancel this primary more than anything they've ever wanted.
Why are they so horny to set a precedent to cancel an election?
Right?
It's
so, like, wild.
When we have one scheduled in November that could like potentially end humanity as we know it.
If you can have a flimsy, stupid reason, like it's just going to be annoying to figure out to cancel an election. I mean, all elections are annoying to figure out. There's not a single election.
Right.
Counting votes is annoying. Like, sorry. That's, you can't, there's nothing about an election that's not annoying.
Oh, no, so they knew what they were getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not, like, you can't. So in any case, this is all leading up to Brent's moment of hilarity, but we're going to get there in a second. So they have filed this appeal on Wednesday. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the appeal and probably something terrible, knowing how things are going. But in any case, I was talking about this with my mother because she's furious about it, living in New York State, as she is. And she let me know that the way that they're handling mail-in voting in New York State might be behind some of the issues they're having imagining a world with mail-in voting. And that is because instead of just sending ballots to voters, they are sending applications for absentee ballots to voters. Just as a reminder, they don't have no excuse absentee voting in New York State. So they are requiring them to fill out an application with an excuse for why they can't go to the polls. And the only modification they made was that you can use coronavirus as an excuse. They could cut the cost of holding this by mail in half if they didn't require twice the mailing of any other state. Because this is the very same week that we found out that the California election in November is just going to be fully by mail.
Yeah, as it turns out, if you know the addresses of all the registered voters, which you would.
Which you have to know in order to let them vote.
You could send them a ballot instead of sending them an application for a ballot.
That's right. And you can just assume they won't fill it out if they don't feel like voting. There's no reason to go through the extra step of asking them why they need a ballot during a pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a real prime example of why people sort of think that government doesn't work very effectively.
Well, I was saying my mom is seeing Trump signs go up everywhere in upstate New York right now, and it's kind of freaking both of us out. And I was like, To be fair, though, these are the Democrats that they're working with. Like, these people have gone to the mat to make sure an election gets canceled, using an excuse that is primed for Donald Trump to use to cancel the election in November. And also, the state is, like, forcing them to vote in this primary via a Byzantine system of applications that, if I know the New York State Board of Elections, will involve them being printed at a different office than they're read, or something like that. Because the other thing they do is they had online voter registration in New York State a few years ago, or a system that they claimed was online voter registration, where you could fill out an application online through the DMV, then the DMV printed it and mailed it for you. So there was a huge backlog on the other end because the DMV was not keeping up with the online request because it still involved somebody mailing mailing a registration to the Board of Elections. Like, for some reason, A, they couldn't go straight to the Board of Elections, and B, the system couldn't be done online. It involved a printer. So.
Oh. God.
So that's the latest on New York State.
Amazing.
Meanwhile, we have an election happening here on Tuesday.
Oh, God.
Which and, no one's heard about.
Yeah, and all signs point to it being bad, actually. Minutes before this podcast, I was just, like, poking around, and I was on HuffPost, and this is actually their, like, lead story now, because it seems like somehow Democrats are going to lose an election right now.
We did it!
Oh, God. How did we manage that, you guys? I mean, I know this has been a Republican seat since basically the beginning of time, but it seemed like it was, you know, we had won it in 2018. This is Katie Hill's seat.
Right, and Hillary Clinton won it.
Yeah.
Right.
So yes. It's an evolving seat. It's not a Republican seat, it's an evolving seat.
Yeah.
It's a confused
for the ultimate
seat.
Swing seat. It's a confused seat.
Yeah.
It was also confused from the beginning because it was actually on the ballot twice in March because they had the primary for this special election and the primary for the November election, and they have the same contestants. So as they were reporting results, we were here for some reason the results weren't identical. And so we were hearing results for the different ones, and we couldn't figure out which election they were for.
Yeah.
In any case, this is the seat that Katie Hill gave up. It's the seat that Christy Smith, who is a state assemblywoman in California, is running for against Mike Garcia. It's been a close race. It was close in the primary, but obviously there were other candidates. And now I think we're sort of facing a little bit of a concern that, largely because people don't know that they're supposed to vote and also how to vote, and if they haven't gotten a ballot, where to vote. There's not really a lot of awareness about just any general detail about this election that you might need to know.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has ballots for this now. They mailed ballots to everyone, and there's also a few places that are having in-person voting yeah. as well. So, I mean, I think that people at least got a ballot. So I think that there is some hope that, like, this isn't all totally lost, but I think between fundraising and between, I think, early absentee counting and various other things are sort of, like, pointing to this being maybe a loss.
Well, people are also busy and confused. The seat got a little
confused.
Confused. People got a little national attention this week because Trump tweeted about it, endorsing Garcia. And that's splashier than the Clinton and Obama endorsements that Christy Smith has gotten. Also, Christy Smith is not as dynamic a candidate as Katie Hill was, so a lot of the focus on that election when we did win it was about the sort of cult of personality around Katie Hill. She had, you know, it was a race that Hollywood got very interested in. It was a race that saw a lot of volunteers from south of the district come up and knock doors.
That's the thing. I know so many people that was like, that was the hot spot if you like lived in LA proper. Like if you wanted to go to a district that was close-ish by and like actually feel like you were doing a thing. Like I know so many people who drove up there and door knocked or called.
Totally.
My boyfriend ran Equality California. They were up there. He was running their door knocking. Like there were a lot of nonprofits who were up there. Like, so I think it is definitely, you know, in 2018, it benefited from all of that. And obviously that can't be done right now. But also
but
you would hope that people
would
need it to be like, you know, prodded to vote. But
Katie Hill won by double digits too. So it's not like that didn't end up being a super or almost double. I think she was 9% or something, but she ended up winning by a huge number. I think the one thing I will say is that was one of those races where the results came in really late. And so it could be that Democrats are just fucking last-minute planner lazy people.
That
and that
tracks.
I think we see that a lot in this state. We saw that in a lot of those swing districts in 2018,
totally.
Where the results didn't come in for weeks. And we were sitting around, you know, the Democrats were sitting around thinking they hadn't won all of these seats, that they all sort of slowly drifted to the left. So I think Democrats maybe vote later. But Republicans are in general better at voting in non-presidential elections. And this is a seat that has only recently shifted. So it certainly has a strong Republican contingent.
Yeah.
So it, if just you live seems in that like district, a, please vote.
Right. It just seems like such a really bad time for any Democrat to even figure out how to lose an election. And I get all of the things that sort of like make it difficult right now that we just talked about. But like, come on.
I know.
Like, it's really? Right wild. Now? We're going to lose an election?
It's also
well, no,
though,
we're
maybe
not going to know we lost it till like August.
Right. We'll never find out.
If it's all mail-in. Oh my God. I know.
Yeah, we're never going to find out the results of any election. But look, that's better than people not voting, New York State.
Right. And if we don't find out until August, they have to rerun this in November. So
yeah, they won't even get the Republican wins.
If the Republican, right, exactly. They will hardly even be there.
Right. Yeah. It's a bad narrative for the Democrats to lose. It's not, it doesn't actually mean anything to Congress if the Democrats lose.
Right.
But also,
it's not a great
feels
look.
Like, the idea that there's any, I mean, this is, I think, a really inconvenient time to run an election because we're right at the point where everyone is really sick of sitting in their homes. And so we are seeing these, like, people who want to get the economy opened back up starting to kind of, like, come out of the woodwork. And they look very public and, like, they're a huge, you know, they've become this sort of very visible mass of people. The coronavirus response has been a huge issue in this race, but the race shifted very suddenly into having to be, you know, sort of address that. And so the candidates have, you know, Christy Smith has been pretty vocal in her support of Newsom's plan to, like, basically keep us as locked down as possible for as long as possible. And Mike Garcia is sort of giving mixed messages, like Trump often does, where he's like, right, we should be safe, but we should open everything up. And so I think some of it is just the confusion of voters having to respond to the confusion of the messaging in real time that we are living through. So I could see this being just like a terrible time because it's like the moment that everyone got bored at home that, you know, to have to run a race
right,
between someone who wants to keep things closed and someone who wants to keep things open.
Yeah.
But in any case, getting to the top line news here, the presidential election had a moment. You rarely hear about the presidential election in your daily life. So it had a kind of splashy moment this week because Tara Reid finally gave an interview. Someone finally agreed to interview her, and it was Megyn Kelly.
It was Megyn Kelly.
Not a network, not a news outlet, just Megyn Kelly.
Just an internet video of her interviewing, being interviewed by Megyn Kelly.
Right. And, like, you know, I have mixed emotions about Megyn Kelly being the person to do this, but, like, what I, you know, as you mentioned, like, nobody else would take this. And, like, look, I get it. There are people out there, people in the media who sort of, like, don't think that this is a thing. Everybody wants to sort of, like, forget it. And, like, look, I can sort of understand those feelings. But, like, it's also, like, have we gotten to a point where, like, we've obviously moved on from Believe All Women because we're not doing that.
Right.
But, like, have we also moved beyond, like, Give All Women a Voice? Like, it's weird right, to me that, like, they have had every single surrogate for Joe Biden and Joe Biden himself on every single news network having the chance to do this. It just seems weird to me that it would have to be on a YouTube video with Megyn Kelly that this would have to be done.
I think this is their strategy, and I have more thoughts on that related to there were some new court documents from her divorce divorce paperwork with her husband in, like, you know, 1996 or whatever, that also mentioned this. But in that article was something that I had read before, and it just, like, it sort of, like, hit me. It hits me every time I read it, but it's, like, really telling, I think, about what their strategy is here, where it's from Ted Kaufman, who's Biden's chief of staff at the time in 93. And he says, "I've consistently said, what is the truth here? That she never came to me. I don't remember her. And had she come to me in any of these circumstances, I would remember her. But I don't, because she did not." The idea that his denial hinges on him not remembering her is, I think, exactly what their strategy is here. Their denial of this hinges on her not being present in the story. And so I think that they are sort of, like, you know, they're still using the language of Me Too. They're still kind of like vaguely skirting around the idea that they care about believing all women. But if she isn't given the voice to tell the story, then there is no woman to believe. So everything's fine.
Well, she had, like, wasn't she supposed to be on Chris Wallace,
she was
maybe?
Fox. Yeah. Yeah, she was going to be interviewed by Chris Wallace, and she pulled out. And she had said before that that the only interviews she was getting were from Fox News, and she was feeling very torn about it because she wanted to tell the story, but also, like, could not get any, like, credible news sources to cover it. And so I think that's what this Megyn Kelly thing was, sort of, like, splitting the difference, where Megyn Kelly, horrible human being, but... Given that this story has no racial complications, and Megyn Kelly's main horribleness is that she's a racist, she is someone who understands sexual harassment.
Yeah.
So I feel like, to some degree, that was like an attempt to split the difference between people who would be willing to cover it and people who might cover it at least with some shred of kind of sympathy or understanding about why this, or at least an understanding of why it's important the story get told. And I guess that's, if you're in the Fox News universe, and you have to be interviewed by somebody, and it's about a Me Too issue. I mean, Megyn Kelly's really the only person that you could reasonably choose in that situation.
Or Gretchen.
So I guess there's that. Or Gretchen, but Gretchen wouldn't have done this, because Gretchen is kind of chicken shit about this kind of stuff. So Megyn Kelly has nothing to lose.
No.
She's been destroyed and reborn more times than any other personality.
Megyn Kelly has $70 million from her NBC payout. She can... She can host a talk show on YouTube if she wants to, from her den.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that that's what I think is so offensive about their strategy, is it hinges on them just erasing her so that they don't have to ignore her.
Yeah.
And that is like, I think this is maybe something that also just like intrinsically hits you as a female in the workplace a lot, where like people are often just not listening to you. And so they claim to not have heard. I mean, it's why, you know, people take your ideas at work. It's why you get mansplained to a lot. People oftentimes aren't listening to you when you're a woman.
Right.
And so the idea that the chief of staff's excuse hinges on him not remembering her when he probably wasn't fucking listening, because that is like a common experience of every woman in every workplace in America, and specifically in the 90s on the Hill. Like, it's just, it's I think a little bit more sort of like to the point than, like, it sort of makes her point for her without him having to make any point at all, which is what he's endeavoring to not do. Because this requires us to believe that he is a person that would remember a sexual assault complaint. And I don't believe he is, if he's the kind of person who thinks a denial is not remembering a woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So in any case, but there was more corroboration of her story also this week. Because there was some court filings from her 96 divorce that involve a passage that mentions it. And you know what? I'm going to read the passage, because we have all the time in the world. So why not?
Read the whole document. Go.
That's right. This is from her ex-husband's testimony. He said, I met Petitioner in the spring of 93 while working in Washington, D.C. At the early stages of our dating, Petitioner felt comfortable confiding in me, as we both worked for members of Congress and we shared many other common interests. On several occasions, Petitioner related a problem that she was having at work regarding sexual harassment in U.S. Senator Joe Biden's office. Petitioner told me that she eventually struck a deal with the chief of staff of the senator's office and left her position. I was sympathetic to her needs when she asked me for help and assisted her financially and allowed her to stay at my apartment with my roommate while she looked for work. It was obvious that this event had a very traumatic effect on Petitioner and that she is still sensitive and affected by it today. So this, I feel like, is, you know, they keep this, like, she cannot have laid evidence for 30 years.
Right.
Carefully.
It's a longer con than Katie Miller, even.
It would have been a worthless con, because why not? He's run for president, like, or tried to 100 different times. Like, there's been no year in American history since 1984 that Joe Biden hasn't been pondering running for president.
Right.
So, like, why wait until 2020 to destroy him?
And Megyn Kelly asked her about that, actually, too. Because, yeah. And she was like, well, I didn't really feel like we sort of, like, had the language to talk about this prior to now.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, you can't ask the question anymore, why did she only bring it up now? Because we are literally in a different era of this conversation.
And I think a lot of people are sort of being like, why do it, like, now that we actually have a candidate? Well, she was attempting to tell this story for quite some time now.
Yeah.
To the point where, and you know, a lot of people are knocking her for this. And look, I get it. She took this to other campaigns.
Right.
You know, she took this to the Kamala Harris campaign. She took it to, she took it to the Liz Warren campaign, and nobody wanted any part of it. So it's not as if she just, you know, 5 weeks ago decided that she was going to try and take down Joe Biden. That's not what's been happening.
Yeah.
But anyway.
At least one person is winning, though, from this situation. And that's the other Tara Reid.
Oh.
You remember her? Sharknado actress Tara Reid.
I love that that was the thing that they picked.
Her credit?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else you would. I
well,
mean,
it's like it went
yeah,
like.
Yeah, this is from page six.
It went Big Lebowski, American Pie, a bunch of VOD stuff, and then Sharknado. And now
yeah,
this.
Sharknado, splashiest yeah. of those, I think. Certainly, I think the one with the most enduring relevance.
Yes.
So, there's, in any case, you might not be surprised to hear that Tara Reid is seeing her inbox inundated by people who think that she's Tara Reid, the Joe Biden accuser. And so yeah. she's trying to turn that into a motivational speaking career.
What? How? So,
her PR people are ramping up her schedule for personal whatchamacallit, presence. What am I saying? Personal appearances. That's I don't even know the jargon from this world.
Nobody she, does. Motivational right. speaking? Like, it's 2020. Start a lifestyle brand or get out of here.
Right?
That's the move.
For God's sake.
Right. They said that Tara is set to make a major comeback in the next 12 months. First, yeah. nobody is set to make a major comeback in the next 12
no.
months.
No.
Second, no, she's not.
No.
Well, and also, anyone who is set to make any sort of arrival in the next 12 months is also going to be set to be canceled in those 12 months if the Alison Roman story teaches us anything about the internet. Like, you can rise and fall real fast these days. So I wouldn't want to be making my major comeback now.
This was like literally a joke on 30 Rock. It's the most Jenna Maroney thing I've ever heard when Jenna got famous and was like, now when you Google my name, it'll all come up instead of that woman who electrocuted all those horses. It's like, it's, I don't know if Tara or Tara is in that situation, but like I, Tara Reid, just stay home. Stay home.
Just quarantine and Instagram.
Sci-Fi Network will combine two natural disasters and they will cast you in that movie. But until right. then, sit on your hands. It's fine.
You're the yeah. most famous combined disaster TV movie actress in the world. And that
and that's something
should
that,
be enough.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Be happy with that.
In any case, Joe Biden has also started dipping his toe into minor campaigning in the last week and held a couple of events in Florida on Thursday. I have a couple questions before
well,
we even dive
basement,
into this.
But
right,
I mean,
he's from his these are virtual events, which makes me wonder why they are being called Florida events. Like,
yeah.
they could be for the internet. They're for the internet.
Listen,
they're for anyone.
While we're telling people to stay home, let's just tell Joe Biden to stay home and turn right. off your turn off your Wi-Fi. It's fine.
That's right. What I don't understand. Like, he has been look, Joe Biden is being helped by the coronavirus in two main ways. The first
right.
way being
more
the obvious
ways than
one.
Tara Reid is.
Right. The first way being the obvious way is that obviously this has gone terribly for Trump, so everybody hates him and is ready to vote him out of office. The second is it has forced him to a place in this campaign where he doesn't actually have to say anything and can't say anything because he can't leave his home. Like, this is the Joe right. Biden you want, not and that's probably why Trump is trying to send him a test kit to get him back out on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
Because Trump would be doing better if Joe Biden was out saying ridiculous things on the campaign trail. Like, yeah. Joe Biden is best suited right now to stay in his basement and come out on, like, November 10th, hopefully having won an election.
Right.
like, right. that is
to
his
have
best
no
move
part
right now.
In any elect, in, certainly no part in any campaigning, but also no part in any strategy. No part, really, in any part of the election. Just,
no.
it would be best if he literally, if he wanted to get into the 90 Days franchise, he would. we would all be served by him developing an interest in a long-running TV show with three different, you know, offshoots and 100,000 yeah. episodes.
I mean, look, he won like 30 states on name recognition and nothing else. I don't know why you changed that playbook now.
Right.
Like,
you don't need
right.
to.
Coast.
Especially
the hills.
When your digital. Right. Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's okay. Just, I said what I needed to say. Just coast on that. The hill is steep. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Especially when all of your digital events, basically from the beginning of this, have been going so poorly.
I feel like the fact that he is so, is persona non grata on the left is damaging him most specifically in this area, because Bernie Sanders is a person of the exact same age as him who has successfully pulled off digital events over and over and over and over again without any hiccups, including holding events that were real in places where he was a human being and people all over the country watched anyway. And like, Joe Biden can't hold like a brief discussion from his basement about anything.
Right. Well, this one that was, so there were the two events. One was a discussion with African-American leaders in Jacksonville, and that was not broadcast. And then later in the day, he had what he was, what he called a virtual rally. First off, like, I know that we've talked about this before, but it's important to bring up what a non-virtual Joe Biden rally looks like. Right. And it's not something that you want to go to in person or on the internet.
No.
It's
a few old people in chairs.
Right.
And then a press huddle.
Right. And the Pledge of Allegiance and him making a lot of announcements and introducing people.
Right. It's a 1 hour introduce-a-thon in which he does nothing except remind us about Charlottesville and the bulging veins, and then introduce everyone in the room.
Yeah, bulging veins is like the one talking point that his brain has been able to hold on to this entire election.
Consistently, no problem.
But anyway, so that virtual rally was a giant mess. First off, there was a DJ from Tampa, which, listen, no.
In no circumstance is that a good idea.
Anyone else.
Right.
It also feels like you're in Florida. Hire a DJ from Miami or something. I mean, they have a club scene in Florida. There were so many better options even in the state of Florida.
Yeah, a DJ from Tampa is not what you're looking for. They did the Pledge of Allegiance because obviously they always
they
do
have
that.
To.
And then they had a bunch of speakers and tons and even more technological failures.
Yeah. Pixelated speakers, including Charlie Crist and Kathy Castor and a state senator, Janet Cruz.
Right, and Kathy Castor, who he introduced later when he thanked her as Representative Castro.
Right.
Saw that coming, but like,
yeah, right.
Who didn't have that on their bingo card?
But finally, after all of the technical glitches and the Pledge of Allegiance and Representative Castro speaking, he comes out, and this is what you really need to find on the internet to watch, because he is, you know, down sort of like a hallway in his home. He's wearing his aviators, of course, like you do. And he's supposed to sort of like do a dramatic walk to camera, probably take his aviators off, do some sort of like Tom Cruise situation. But instead, he has no idea what's going on. So he looks to camera, and then you can sort of hear him saying, it sounds like maybe like, is it just me? And then, because he doesn't know he's on camera. And then he walks closer, and then he's like, now? As if, is this when I'm supposed to talk? That was his big grand entrance.
I have not watched this video. I don't think I will watch this video, but it reminds me of a couple of weeks ago, somebody in my family was turning 60 and everybody was supposed to send a birthday video greeting. And then they were going to combine them all. And every single one of them was better than that sounds. Like just people at home filming themselves on their iPhones. And they were somehow ahead of our candidate for president.
Luckily, no one saw it because there were points in the earlier speeches where they cut to black with no audio for like minutes at a time. So by the time they got to Joe Biden's dramatic entrance, I can't imagine that anyone was still watching.
But this would have actually been better if he had just done nothing.
Literally, if he had smiled and waved on camera one time at the beginning and then just stopped the rally.
Yeah.
That would have been because it's not like a physical rally where some of the excitement is just of everyone in the room at other rallies, not at his. But
or an old person passing out. Right. Yeah.
Right. Like in theory, a physical rally offers the benefit of just everyone seeing everyone else in the room and then being like, go talk to your neighbors or whatever, and they're like, oh my god, all these people were here with me, except for at a Joe Biden rally, again, in which most of the excitement was about an old man fainting. But this doesn't even offer you that excitement because you already have to work so hard to watch it, and then to watch what is an incompetent campaign operation that, like, if you donate money to, we'll use it to do this kind of thing is, like, really more destructive to the campaigning process than just having no digital rally.
Well, also, like, the point of a rally is to get the energy of a room towards somebody. Right. Virtual reality, like, this just sounds like playing a game of The Sims, and I don't want to do that. I don't understand what the momentum you're gaining from doing like what amounts to a Zoom conference call with Joe Biden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. They don't either, because they don't understand how to use the internet or to put on campaign events. They are like some of the laziest campaigners on the whole planet. So there is like nothing about this that probably seems off-putting to them, because their entire strategy has been nothing up until now. Like, if this went on in a Liz Warren rally, event, if this went on in a Bernie Sanders event, if this went on in a Pete Buttigieg event, like, heads would roll.
Right.
Like, people would be fired over it. Like, it would just, everyone would immediately understand the gravity of the situation and also, like, what the internet is for. But, like, that's not something they worry about.
Did they release numbers on how many people attended the virtual rally?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good
question. No, I didn't see any numbers, but that that would be a good... Also, how many stayed till the end?
Yeah. I'm sure they track it like Netflix. So if you watch, like, the opening
ten seconds, then, yeah.
Just, like, 100% viewers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to move on to the next story.
Do it.
So,
no.
Maybe they're having so much trouble because all of the state parties and other local DNC outposts are being forced to hire Bloomberg staffers that he let go after promising to keep them on staff until November. So it could be that just a lot of overpaid, underqualified people are running everything, which is what it is.
I really thought I was done saying Mike Bloomberg's name this year.
Oh, you're not, because he's our billionaire. He's our billionaire guy.
God.
He was good. His plan was to buy the election no matter what. And the DNC is incompetent, so they were obviously happy to have him have that plan, because right. They have no problem, you know, they have no problem with him making arbitrary and specific demands of them in exchange for money, because they don't understand that the whole idea of representation is that you are representing people who are not billionaires. In like, that is what their like entire like reason for existing is to not represent billionaires. So in any case, Bloomberg, I can't believe this hasn't been a bigger deal, just because I think it discredits him to such a degree that I actually don't think we should take his money anymore. But the idea that he promised all of his campaign
staff...
We'll
take anybody's money.
I know. He promised his campaign staff he'd keep them until November, and he cut them loose as soon as his campaign ended.
Yep.
In the middle of, like, a pandemic, you know, in the middle of,
right,
like,
so
a crisis.
Also.
So they all lost their health insurance. And then he finally had to start paying for their COBRA, because he got so much flack for that. But now he's in there... making demand, his team is making very specific demands of state parties that they very directly tie to their donation, that, you know, their former staffers be hired by local party officials. And like, the idea that A, they're so comfortable tying this kind of direct ask to the money and threatening to withhold the money if this doesn't happen in public statements is kind of wild, because we're all supposed to pretend like we're all in it for the causes and we're all in it for the whatever. Like, usually big donors like this, behind closed doors, they make these kinds of statements, but they're not bombastic enough to make them in public statements. So like, the idea that he's comfortable doing that means that he just like thinks he's bought the DNC for his own whatever personal use he wants, because usually donors don't get to decide about like lower level staffing decisions.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like between him and Trump, we're in the era like, the lesson we've learned is like, billionaires do get to say the quiet part out loud. Think they're entitled to say the quiet part out loud, and we're just supposed to say it.
Well,
okay.
I feel like we have been allowed, like, we're letting him do this, because the first thing that they should have said is, if you care about beating Donald Trump and you care about the issues, then you will give us this fucking money and we will staff whoever the fuck we want. Like, that's what they should have said. Because this is so, like, it's so on the nose and so ridiculous. But it's just, like, A, the fact that we're allowing ourselves to be ordered around by someone whose workplace practices allowed him to spontaneously fire all of these people in a crisis, is, after having a contract with them that said otherwise, is really, I think, seedy and unsavory. Like, I just don't think that we should be allowed... that we should be letting ourselves be associated with these kind of workplace practices in the first place, because how can we argue that we care about worker protections when we're being bankrolled by someone who is making, you know, who is making staffing decisions for us on the basis of his own greed? Because certainly whatever, however many millions of dollars or billions of dollars even that he wants to give to the Democratic Party, it's not more billions than he has. So he's the one who had the money to keep these staffers on. So, like, sorry about that. But also, it's meaning that, you know, local, first of all, they're having to deal with an influx of must hires who have really high salary expectations and, like, basically no qualifications because he was overpaying all of his staff. But also, it means that the DNC is getting money and they're not getting to decide how to use it.
Right. So, they're like, having to hire people instead of, like, using it for either a digital operation or, like, you know, hiring people in specific battleground states or anything like that. They're just, like, now being forced to use his money to hire all the people that he fired.
And it also means that they can't offer any sort of support, and this would be a really popular thing to do, I think, to the two class action lawsuits that are filed against him because he broke his contract with all of his campaign staff. So it means they're just, like, in an awkward situation where they're, like, basically letting themselves be sort of reputation-wise and effectiveness-wise taken down by, like, a fucking greedy billionaire who thinks he owns them and is not afraid to say that. And they're not afraid to hear that for some reason.
Does this mean that the Fuck Jerry meme account is on the DNC payroll yet? Or has that not happened?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a good question. It's an important one for us to get to the bottom to.
We need to get Liz Warren to make a public statement about this. Right? <she's...
laughs> Well, it fucking castrates her. Because it means she can't make a fucking statement about this. Because she needs DNC money. And that means that we can't have anyone act. And that is his point. That is the reason he's doing it.
Right.
Is to stop the criticism of people like him. We should not let ourselves be those people. The policies that would regulate him and him personally, but also his company, are popular. They would get us elected. Like, just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And it's why we're perennial losers all the time. And when I say we, I mean them, because I left the Democratic Party. So everyone's fine. But
still maintain an active interest.
I maintain an active interest.
Well, listen, I am making my own pledge, take it or not, I will not say Mike Bloomberg's name again this year. I'm done.
Oh, I like it.
I'm not doing it.
Need to have, like, a Voldemort-style, like, he who must not be named for him? Or are we just not referencing him at all? Because I feel like he's up to shenanigans.
Yeah, there should be some... We'll come up with a code word offline.
We got to come up with a code word. We'll update our listeners on said code word because I think you're right. Also, by saying his name, we're advertising his company, neither of which deserve our support.
No.
So you're right.
Farewell.
In any case, farewell, he who must not be named / Voldemort. Unemployment. You guys, it's still bad. And they're trying to pretend like it's not as bad because it's not as incredibly bad as it was before. But it's still so bad that it's off the charts.
The way people are talking about this is...
fascinating.
Deeply offensive, also.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, everybody is sort of acknowledging that it's bad, but, like, to go around and be like, oh, it's at 14.7%, but also we thought it was going to be at 16%, so yay, and also it's not as high as when it was in the Great Depression. Like, it's terrible. It's as high as it's been since the end of the World War II.
It's also, we're not taking any steps to alleviate it, so it is going to be like the Great Depression, where the
Well, we are taking steps. We're just reopening the country.
Well, that's true, right.
We're pretending it's not happening.
Right.
The reason unemployment got that high was because they continued to do nothing. It wasn't like that day in 1929, after Black Monday or whatever, the next day unemployment was at 25%. It happened over the course of years, during which they could have intervened and didn't. Like, that is what's happening right now, because we continue to just give money to corporations that they spend on themselves and continue to furlough workers, and then we're shocked that unemployment is at 14%. And also, here's one more point about how the economy is fake, which is,
please,
when you're thinking
about this home.
When you're thinking about these things, just remember that this is all, like, a false creation of our system. Like, we invented money. And what happens in a depression is that rich people hold on to their money because they're afraid they won't make more. So the whole thing is driven by human behavior. It has nothing to do with anything. There are times that, like, small sector depressions occur because of an actual change. So, like, you know, something like, someone discovers that something causes cancer, and then that, you know, a micro depression happens in an industry or something like that. Like, you know, but usually... those kinds of things happen, and then, you know, the government pays them off so that the cigarette industry can keep producing cigarettes and everyone's happy and no one has to talk about it anymore. Like, something like this, where we all just spontaneously lose jobs, and then everyone who has not lost their jobs, A, has nothing to spend their money on because there's no other stuff out there. And B, like, doesn't want to spend their money because we're being told that the economy is in free fall. This is all a result of human behavior where, like, we could just make sure that everyone has enough money to, like, we still have food. Like, we're not running out of the actual basic things that we need to, like, keep people alive and keep roofs over their head. We're running out of circulating money. And it's because the money is held. It's not because the money doesn't exist. So, like, that is why we're empowered to solve it, because we can decide we're going to take some of that money to recirculate it to the people who need it. That is what redistribution does when there's redistributive policies, is it takes the money that's being held and not used and redistributes it to people who can use it. The whole thing relies on circulation of money, and in a situation like this, we have falsely shut that down, but we could just decide that we're circulating money on our own now. Like, we could decide that the government's going to circulate money now. That is the whole point of taxes and the whole point of redistributive policy, and that is why it's important in a time like this to consider those kinds of policies.
Please run the Fed. Just go run it. Right.
Yeah, everyone just... But we just, like, all pretend like we're helpless to stop depressions. People cause depressions. It's not like...
Well, and
depressions
that's what, I mean,
just hit us in waves for no reason.
And that's what the left has been pushing for here on this, is just to, like, literally, you know, Bernie Sanders from the beginning of this, and he's not the only one, but, like, probably the loudest one anyway, was just sort of, like, keep everyone on payrolls.
Yeah.
And that's what they've sort of, like, kind of, you know, nibbled around the edges at with this, you know, sort of the paycheck protection plan and stuff, but there's obviously
right.
not enough for it.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, like a $1,200 check and then some money to small businesses that's like going to actual like large businesses and isn't being tracked because we're not having anybody like actually look at where that money is going. Like, we could just be sending people money.
Right. And the benefit of it is that money circulates. It's not, you don't need to track where it goes. You don't actually care. That's why
Not if it was just going to people, you know.
If it was just going to people,
right.
Exactly. Like, that's, I think, you know, setting income requirements on the stimulus check was stupid because everyone, A, could probably use extra cash right now, but also the point is you just want money circulating. You want people to feel like they have money to spend. And in the case of someone who has their job, they'll feel like they have that money to spend. And in the case of everyone else, they will feel like they, you know, need to spend the money because they need to pay rent or whatever. But, like, the point was to get money circulating. We don't care where it goes as long as it circulates amongst people instead of corporations. Like, the only time tracking matters is if we're giving it away to one entity that then controls a sector of the economy. If it's just going to people, the whole point is that it circulates. Like, I should start my own economics master's program, obviously, of made-up economics.
It would be as real as the current one, so please do.
I was going to say, my grandfather was an economist, and he always said economists are charlatans. And that is the only reason I was able to come up with this. He is who helped me understand how fake the economy actually is. And is the only reason I have these radical economy theories. But I feel like the world could use them right now.
They really could. I owe your grandfather a debt of gratitude because you convinced me. You convinced me of this before anyone was talking about it.
Right. Yeah, so meanwhile, in any case, 3.2 million unemployment claims this week. That's bringing the total up to 33.5%. That's 21% of the workforce. That means that the 14% unemployment rate is not also properly... First of all, that's not representative because that's people seeking active work. We've always known those figures are... always deeply,
that's a
you know,
huge undercount of people who are actually unemployed right now, especially considering that the amount of people who have filed for unemployment claims is 33.5 million. Now, granted, they've allowed more people to file for unemployment claims. You can file for unemployment if your hours have been reduced, so then you're technically not unemployed. So, like, that's why these numbers sort of like don't necessarily, you know, directly track together. But, you know, certainly 21% of the workforce filing for unemployment is not nothing.
That's not nothing. No.
That number heading into this, and for the last few years, really, has been in the 200,000s, just to give you an idea.
Right. So this week that shows that the trend is slowing down because it's not 6 million people is compared to 200,000. So, just FYI.
But we're in the fifth week in a row that it's gone down, so hooray.
Economists feeling good about this. Feeling good.
Positive sign.
What a boom.
We're trending in the right direction.
These are also, like, new unemployment claims, so it's cumulative. So, like, it going down is still a... It's, like, a less net negative, but it's not a net negative. Like, right. They talk like the trend is all that matters here.
Right, we're
like,
falling slower than we were before, but we're still right, falling. Right, exactly.
We're still falling, and we're still... The momentum hasn't shifted. We're just falling less fast than incredibly fast. Maybe this all explains why city councils, like New Orleans, are starting to pass Medicare for All resolutions.
Yes.
Because...
Maybe, indeed.
Because 43 million Americans could lose their health insurance during the coronavirus pandemic. About half of Americans get their insurance through a job. There's been, obviously, a huge number of layoffs, and the quarantine measures will also, I think, continue to cause... I mean, we're starting to see increasing layoffs in white-collar sectors, so at first it was a lot of blue-collar and service industry, and we're starting to see kind of ripple effects of that now, where we're starting to see job losses in sectors that we didn't really expect to see job losses in if this had only been like a quick thing, but I think they're looking ahead and seeing that their business is sort of permanently slowing down.
When you hear, to that point, when you hear President Trump talking about how the economy is just going to come back and it's going to come back stronger than ever, it's not. I mean, it will come back and people will go back to work, especially if you fucking force them to go back to work. But like, some of these businesses don't just come back. Like, these businesses are gone.
Yeah, and it takes a huge amount of investment to start new businesses, which is going to be money people don't have. So we're actually going to be like starting from behind anyway, because if your restaurant closes, and you know, we know that restaurants are particularly vulnerable to this because they operate on really thin margins.
Like, restaurants in Los Angeles that you think are doing a bang up job close daily in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Right. Restaurants in good times just like spontaneously close after having full dining rooms for months on end. Yeah. So restaurants are not, you can't just like then open a new restaurant. Like, restaurants take investment to start up again, which is why it's important to keep businesses at least open, not open enough, but to support businesses through something like this with things like rent relief and, you know, paycheck, you know, protection and things like that, so that they don't have to go through the costs of starting up again, because that's where you see the barrier to entry get higher and higher to people having jobs.
Right.
Like, if there's, and that's again where circulating money helps. If everyone, you know, if the recession is happening and everyone's hoarding the money, people can't get the investments that they need to start these kinds of businesses. People have to be optimistic to invest in things. Right. That is, it's all based on everyone's mood, basically. And if the mood is people being anxious, they're not going to invest in restarting a lot of these businesses. So a lot of these jobs are just gone.
Another thing that would help people have money to restart a business would be not having to worry about paying for their own healthcare out of pocket.
There it is. I want to encourage everyone who has ever said to themselves, the health insurance situation is terrible, thank God it doesn't affect me, to think to themselves a little critically about how it could if anything happens to their job. Because I think people are often caught off guard by how terrible the system is once they actually have to navigate it. I think a lot of people, especially if you're like relatively healthy, you don't have a lot of, you know, need for doctors, like, just don't realize the system that they're in because they haven't really interacted with it. And especially people who consider themselves the kind of people that will always have employer-sponsored insurance don't know how expensive and ridiculous the exchange plans are, or even the off-exchange plans are. I would encourage everyone to just look into that while we have the time and we're sitting at home. I think what you will find is a lot of concerning information about that could affect your future after all, because it turns out no jobs are safe. So I think people have this tendency to sort of be like, well, my job is safe, so this could never affect me. As if, I mean, Brent has seen his insurance, which is, you know, at his job.
Yeah, I've had employer-based health insurance
his whole career.
Since, you know, for pushing 20 years now at the same job.
But he has seen costs affect his care.
Right.
I mean, if you're a longtime listener, you've heard us rant about this enough. But
right.
That's not that's
it doesn't get old, though. Keep going.
That's
it
why the whole... Old. That's why when everybody is like, oh, you're going to kick people off your health insurance, like, that's why that always gets me so worked up, because it's just sort of like, well, I have had the same job for 20 years and did, in fact, get kicked off of my health insurance.
Right.
And had to find a new doctor because of that being the case.
No, so. In any case, look into your insurance options. Right. Find out what your state's laws are. You'll be surprised. Yeah. Or you'll be confused.
Horrified,
but neither outcome is good. Yeah. Right.
But don't worry, guys, because Chuck and Nancy are here.
Ready with a Rooseveltian package.
I don't trust that either of them have any inkling as to what that is.
Certainly not. I think they're maybe talking about a very minor kind of Paycheck Protection Act, which is, it's too late, you guys. The people have already lost their jobs. You do that at the beginning so that everyone can keep the job that they have. But once we're losing the jobs, you're not providing widespread support to people by just looking at very targeted programs that could maybe affect a few people. And they are big supporters of only doing targeted programs that maybe affect a few people. That's their
strategy. And wearing a fabulous coat, unfortunately.
That's right. And listen, Nancy Pelosi is certainly showing up with a mask game that no one else in Congress is matching.
She has
had a lot of matching masks.
She has also definitely figured out how to continue to get whatever facial treatments that she's been having over the years.
I am shocked by how many people seem to, mid-pandemic, be able to continue to get Botox. Mm-hmm. You see, celebrities who are frequently, now they're just frequently videotaping themselves against white walls because they're afraid to show us their homes after we almost ate them in the first month of the pandemic. Wow.
Imagine did a lot of crazy things to a lot of people's heads. So understand.
continues to be just a cornucopia of people with fresh Botox. a lot of sprightly looking people on the internet.
I think there are a lot of really awkward FaceTime tutorials going on with medical professionals trying to steer that from remotely.
Oh, fascinating.
I would give myself Botox.
I would not.
I wouldn't either, but I imagine if it's been going for a while, you're not going to stop now.
I also know someone who lost sight in one eye getting a laser treatment on her face, and now I'm just sort of like, no one should put needles near anywhere that's near your eyes.
That's a nightmare
situation that's out there. FYI. No. In any case, don't expect big things from this. Because no matter how big and bold their plan is, Mitch McConnell has a different plan, which is to put that is for Congress to go into recess and just think a little to themselves.
Right. Schumer, maybe Schumer does sort of have more facts about what Rooseveltian plan would be. I don't know, because he sort of accused McConnell of being like Hoover leading into the Great Depression, which sort of makes sense.
Because
Hoover famously predicted that there was going to be a rapid economic recovery in 1930, and then instead we had the Great Depression.
Right. Just kind of did nothing.
Which, by the way, lasted until 1939, in case you're thinking that this is going to be over tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah.
So
any of those stories that you heard from your family at the time where they sold a house for a dollar or something like that, we have plenty of time to reach that level of late-stage capitalism.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I will say is when the Democrats first took over Congress, they passed a lot of big things that I think that they knew were never going to pass the Senate just because they were things that they said that they were going to pass. That's the only thing that maybe gives me a little bit of hope here is that they may just be to the point where if they know that the Republicans aren't going to pass something, then maybe they will actually sort of acknowledge the things that they do need to do, just sort of secretly just knowing that it's never going to go anywhere.
Yeah. I hope that they at least try for ideas.
Right. Now's the time. It's if Mitch McConnell is just going to sit on it, then pass Medicare for all, at least until the end of the pandemic. Those are things that people have been talking about. Even Joe Biden has hinted at ideas like that. So now would be the time to pass something like that. Especially if you're Nancy Pelosi and you don't actually agree with that, which she doesn't.
Right.
That that it will never get out of the Senate.
Right.
It's perfect cover for her.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's first of all, it's not going to lose her any voters because she's representing San Francisco and they would love to have Medicare for all and just can't get rid of the powerhouse that is Nancy Pelosi's sort of whole thing. She's an institution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't lose her ability to be elected, and she's having plenty of conversations behind closed doors with business leaders anyway, I'm sure. And she can just be like, this isn't actually going to pass, but we got to do it. We got to keep these voters in.
Right.
Right. Just pass the bill, get the photo op, and then let McConnell be the fucking villain like he always
is. Right. It's a popular policy. People love it. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, let somebody else tie it up and put it on the train tracks. You don't have to do that.
Speaking of that bill, do you know who is super jazzed about it?
Yeah.
Our hopeful a VP hopeful Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Who
is working with like the two most progressive members of the Senate, Bernie Sanders and Ed Markey right now, on a bill that would send $2,000 to every American making less than $120,000, which is actually higher than what the current requirements for the $1,200
check. Well, there are people who understand negotiating. You don't start with the last deal they gave you.
Right.
You got to be smarter than that.
Yeah. But yeah, so it would allow married couples to file who file together to get $4,000 and then also have $2,000 for each child up to three. It would also block debt collectors from accessing that money to like seize it for payments from people who owe money, because that's been a thing that's been happening with
thing to have to say, but here we are.
Right, exactly. It would also be retroactive back to March. And this is something that Sanders has been pushing for a while. It's interesting to me that he got Harris signed on for this, not because I don't think that she probably agrees that something like this needs to happen, but I have a feeling it's probably a little bit more calculated than that, in the sense that she would put her name on this, because she is definitely sort of like at the top of everyone's list for VP. And I think the reason that she has been at the top of that list is because I think that there is this misconception with the Joe Bidens of the world that she is a lot more progressive than she is. And look, she has a fairly progressive voting record. Like, I can't argue with that. But that's also just because, like, a lot of the things that the left cares about are not things that are getting brought up for votes in the Senate.
Right.
So it's easy to have a progressive voting record and not actually be progressive. So I have a feeling that this is sort of like, I think that she's probably about to be the vice president. At least that's what sort of like all signs are pointing to.
And I think just build her credibility with the left
I think that that's at least in part what this is. I mean, I'm not saying that she doesn't also agree with it, but
even if she doesn't, sort of though, like, if this is what pandering looks like, pander away, honey.
Well, that exactly. Right. I mean, I'm not mad at it.
Let's hope everyone thinks they're in the VP running.
Please. Yes. Step up to the plate.
Right. Let's start rumors that, you know, a lot of moderates are up for.
Yeah, I want to hear Amy Klobuchar like defending universal basic income. Go.
Exactly. Well, that's Kirsten Gillibrand became progressive to run for president. Her voting record moved far to the left as soon as it became clear she intended to announce. Like, I mean, she was planning this for years, so it wasn't like recently. But we've been talking about that, and that works. That dangling that works. She was a great senator for that whole time, in part because she was planning to run for president.
What's interesting about this is the first time that she has put her name on anything with Bernie Sanders since she was the first co-sponsor to his 2017 Medicare for All plan.
Well, that was before she knew what Medicare for All was.
Which she then sort of immediately disavowed, but also sort of didn't really disavow, because she didn't know whether she wanted private insurance companies to exist. And then maybe she did want them to exist, but then also, again, maybe she didn't want them to exist. And then she didn't know at least 17 times whether she did. She raised her hand at the wrong time and then had to issue some cockamamie statement about not understanding the question when she raised her hand. And then she wrote her own plan, which was almost crazy. As cockamamie as Liz Warren's plan was. sorry, love Liz Warren, but... it's just interesting that they have now found each other for this, I feel like.
I think,
but I'm glad that they have.
No, hey, I would love if our senator was up to these sorts of things. She has not been all the time, and so that has been disappointing, but here we are. It's a new day. Maybe we could pretend she's going to be the vice president forever.
Just keep dangling that carrot in front of
her. Keep dangling that carrot. Probably become a great senator. Meanwhile, crime news. Oh, a lot of crime news. First of all, if you've been on the internet this week, unless you have terrible, annoying friends, then you heard about the eventual final arrest of the people who killed Ahmaud Arbery, who was just innocently trying to go for a jog as a black man and got killed by the McMichaels, Gregory and Travis McMichael, a father and son, who inexplicably decided that they should stop him because they thought he looked suspicious, and then like murdered him, and then like somehow just went free for that. And then so they finally released a video on Tuesday that showed the altercation happen, and it was funny because the video actually got leaked by someone that thought it would clear the McMichaels, but instead everyone watched it and they were like, you just murdered this man, You can't be fucking murdering people for jogging. That's not a thing. And so finally, there was so much public attention and pressure on the case that and the like first prosecutor like recused herself because she knew the McMichaels or something like that. I mean, it was a mess. But so they finally arrested the McMichaels.
Yeah, because this murder took place in February.
Yeah, this murder took place months ago. And the McMichaels were just wandering free, having murdered an innocent man for no reason. Because it's...
Wandering free and you know not wearing fucking masks, if you've seen them.
Oh,
they were
for sure.
Mask free.
No.
But yeah, they're just like out there in Brunswick, Georgia, murdering people. Right. Murdering black men for trying to go for a jog for their health. In any case, this really like blew up this week because of that video being released. So it turns out that in order to get justice in any of these cases, all we have to do is have the entire nation post about it nonstop on social media until it finally gets partially resolved, but not even fully resolved.
Either. No.
And that doesn't, no. I was going to say, and that has, that's, we've tried that in other times before and it has not worked out. So it's like we're batting like maybe 25% even on that strategy, but otherwise we just don't seem to care. This feels like, I mean, it feels like a story that because we were all stuck at home and already so annoyed with life being the way that it is now, like really struck a chord in a way that's more powerful than what we have seen recently with these kinds of stories, where I think there was like a lot more time for people to like ponder this, I think.
Yeah.
Because I saw people go on, like, enraged rants on social media about this. People who have never otherwise mentioned one of these murders of, like, an innocent black person, like, trying to exist in the world and having just, like crazed gunmen come after them for no reason. Because this obviously happens all the time. Sometimes those crazed gunmen are the police. You know, whatever. My point is, I saw a lot more enraged posting about this than I'm used to seeing. And I think it was just because everyone had a lot of time to sit with it. Because... we spent all week with almost nothing else to focus on except the dissolution of our society.
Yeah.
And so...
well, and there's also, you know, in this one, I mean, there usually is, but in this one especially, there was like a John Grisham level of obvious villainy. Like, there's just no...
yes.
There's no right. gray to this at all. It's very, yeah. very cut and dry. And there's video.
Yeah. Right, and it's two random guys. It's not a police officer. It's like
right.
two guys who thought it was okay to murder someone because they were feeling threatened themselves in a fake contrived setting in which they created the dynamic.
Right, and there's
made them
the
feel threatening anyway, threatened anyway.
There's like the argument that they thought he looked like a serial burglar or something, which even if he is a serial burglar, that does not...
don't murder him.
What kind of vigilante bullshit society is Georgia that you can do that? Right. Don't answer that question because I don't want to know.
I was going to say...
I think what's even worse than Georgia is that this is, like, Florida-Georgia line is what
yeah,
this
Yeah, it
is.
Was Florida-Georgia oh. line to name a band and a region. That so it was, like, the worst combination of places.
Yeah.
It's the worst region in America. But just FYI to our listeners, if you believe that you are seeing a burglar on the run, just because they have burgled things does not mean you should shoot them.
No, that's not the punishment for burglar.
No.
That is an unrelated thing to do to a burglar.
Whatever you learned in a Walker, Texas Ranger episode 15 years ago about citizen's arrest is incorrect.
Right. That's right.
that's definitely where they learned this, too.
100%.
I was going to say, that's exactly what was going on here. Yes. This was a straight Walker, Texas Ranger. And
how had I never drawn that line?
Be grateful your brain doesn't... form thoughts like that.
I have only ever seen Walker, Texas Ranger dubbed into French because the only time I ever watched it was in France when I was a teenager. I was staying with like a host family and they loved Walker, Texas Ranger and they kept asking if this was what America was like. And I was like, I don't know what we're looking at here. Like, I live in a city with 8 million people in it and I've never seen a man who looks like this before in my life.
Why is Walker, Texas Ranger on in France? I know we are so far afield, but that is...
It was a question that I was left with that never got fully answered. Okay. That
we
was
live far afield. Yeah,
exactly. Don't. Right. We're also about to segue this into a conversation about Michael Flynn. So,
great.
We had plenty of space to play with.
Great.
In the middle.
This is the criminal section.
That's
right.
Podcast.
This is a crime update from us.
Yeah.
The Justice Department is dropping all their charges against Michael Flynn.
Of course they are.
This is a man who admitted. Pled guilty to lying. He's not, it's not like they caught him in a series, a complicated series of webs of deception. Like, he told them he lied.
Yeah.
He said he committed a crime. He said, I commit, he's a man who has admitted to committing a crime.
That's right. And also was, and other people admitted that he lied to them also.
It's a corroborated crime.
Right. Mike Pence said that he lied to him. Now Mike Pence is like, we'd be happy to have him back. Like, what is going on there?
Here's how messy this is. So I got the push notification that the Justice Department was dropping its case against charges against Michael Flynn. And my brain was like, oh, wow, there must be new, like something cleared him, some evidence, whatever. Right. And then I opened him like, oh, no, that's right. The Justice Department is just like the fucking Beagle Boys from DuckTales. And like they do whatever, they just do whatever they want.
Yeah, nothing new has happened.
No, not at all.
Just the same amount of facts have happened, and we know the same amount of information. We just decided to change our minds, and then
Bill Barr decided to change his mind.
Bill Barr decided,
and that's what's happening here. Because Trump at one point said that he didn't know this was going to happen, which I don't believe because he hinted at it happening a week ago. So like, he can't resist a tease.
Like he,
but it also doesn't matter whether Trump did or didn't know because Bill Barr is functioning as Trump himself anyway. So whether Trump knows or not is irrelevant because Bill Barr is just acting on the behalf of Donald Trump, which we should remind you is not the job of the Attorney General.
He's the active wing of Donald Trump. Donald Trump's own wing is just ranting on Twitter and like eating cheeseburgers. Like,
right, he's the thinking.
Playing golf.
For sure.
Yeah, right. He's like the active, he's active Trump.
Right. And then he was asked about this week, actually.
This is a great quote.
Yeah, he was asked how history was going to remember him about this Bill Barr. And he said, well, history is written by the winners. So it largely depends on who's writing the history. So that's literally what they're trying to do here. They're trying to just make it appear as though this entire Russia investigation
didn't happen.
Man. It's also nothing to see here the entire time.
Like a weirdly emo way for him to put that. Like, it's so kind of like depressive also. Like, is he also depressed about the situation he's found himself in?
He thinks he is. He's very happy about it.
I think he is because he was like a real person before this. And so his dinner party circuit has changed dramatically because he used to be a person who like had dinners with real people and not just like these nonsense lunatics. Like we've said many times on the podcast that like of the first families that you would want to like sit through dinner with, like there are many, or of just any political family, like there are political families I don't agree with that I think would be fun dinner guests. Like the McCains would probably be spunky, you know. I think even George Bush was probably fun to have dinner with. You know, that was his whole appeal, was about him being a guy you'd want to have a beer with.
Right.
The Trumps seem like the most boring people on the planet. Like I would not want them as dinner guests, not because I have ideological differences with them, but just because I think it would be a boring dinner. They seem like the kind of people who would look at their phone the whole time.
Well, it would be 10 minutes of him like pulling out old press clippings for The Apprentice, which is like, which is like the story that when he was on SNL, apparently he cut it out of a newspaper and was just passing it around to people. Like, hey, number one last week, did you see? Which is stupid, but also like really, really sad because...
Yes, so sad.
Because similar to what you're saying, like, look, part of the reason people want these big, powerful jobs is the dinner party circuit, the access it grants them. And these people will not get that whenever this ends, if this ever ends for them. And so they're just getting power for the sake of power so they can, like, run around and show people who don't care about it.
It doesn't buy them anything
other
that is, like, personally satisfying. It just buys them fleeting glory that they can't even cash in later.
It's like winning a video game. Like you feel really powerful maybe for a second and then you're like, oh wait, none of this is real.
Right.
No offense to our gamers who are listening. Love you.
Right. To our active gaming listening. In any case, we also had some fun Nixon comedy from Donald Trump.
This is amazing. First off, apparently, this entire interview on Fox and Friends was a real trip, which is not surprising at all because it would be. Every time he calls into Fox and Friends.
I mean, that's a pinned tweet right there. Like, that, whenever he calls in, it's like a morning radio show from the 90s. Like, somebody's going to be playing an air horn off to the side. Somebody's hitting a cowbell at some point. Like, it's that level of zany.
Yeah. But he said this week, he said, I learned a lot from Richard Nixon. Don't fire people. Which is an insane thing to say, first off, that you learned a lot of a lot from Richard Nixon.
He learned a lot about covering up for a crime from Richard Nixon.
Right, exactly. Also, he's fired a bunch of people, specifically James Comey, which is a questionable decision
on his part.
In terms of sort of, like, legalness of it. So, like, you didn't learn that from Richard Nixon.
Right.
And I don't even know if that was a lesson that Richard Nixon was actively teaching people. Like, yeah. I think the American people
taught you that if you commit a crime, don't immediately fire everyone who might be involved in investigating it.
Right. But then later in the interview, he sought to clarify later in the interview. I don't know if this is just because he had Nixon on the brain or if his brain told him at some point that maybe it wasn't great that he had compared himself to Nixon. I sort of don't think that that's
probably
the case.
It wasn't that. I don't think it was that.
That's either. a level of self-reflection he's not capable of.
I know. Right. I think he probably just has been thinking a lot about Richard Nixon lately for obvious reasons. But so he sought to clarify and he said, number one, here's the reasons that he's different. Number one, he may have been guilty. And number two, he had tapes all over the place. I wasn't guilty. I did nothing wrong. And there are no tapes. But I wish there were tapes in my case.
Man.
He's a scattered man. A lot of scattered thoughts.
Guys.
Just a lot of clogged synapses shooting into oblivion.
Right, yeah. Like, it's like just heading in any direction. Once he's heard the word Nixon, he has a lot of places to go but they don't end anywhere.
He's like badly performing AI at this point. Like, he's just here.
Like
he's hearing words and then shooting out like everything in the database
like
that was
word
related
cloud.
To that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then final news. Have you seen Plandemic?
Yeah, have you seen Plandemic, Grant?
No.
Well, don't, first of all. Save yourself. First of all, why is this video getting so much traction with it being 30 minutes long?
Look, it's too long for starters, because this was sent to me by my dad and said, what do you think of this? So I'm going to give him that he knew that it was crazy and was asking for my opinion for confirmation that it was crazy.
Right.
Which I certainly gave to him.
Yeah. So wait, for me and the other ignorant people, give me like a quick summary of what this is.
Well, I don't know because I didn't watch it.
I only watched the first 10 minutes.
And the Plandemic truthers are, well, they're not listening to this, but if they are, they're going to come at me because they're going to be like, you didn't watch it. And I didn't and I won't. It's some discredited scientist who claims that like there's microviruses in vaccines and like
it's an anti-vaxxer thing.
Oh, it's an anti-vaxxer thing?
Yeah, and she also worked on HIV with Dr. Fauci, so it's like a Dr. Fauci hit piece because she thinks that he like stole some of her work or something, so there's also just sort of like there's that going on here.
There's the fact also, that the filmmaker for his lower third describes himself as father/filmmaker.
Is that some production company out of Ojai that just like makes like crazy things?
That's almost worse than Tampa Bay DJ as your descriptor.
Ojai filmmaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like become like an internet phenomenon. Like I've seen people reference it everywhere.
And it has also made some real strange bedfellows. Well, they're not strange bedfellows because we talk a lot about how they are often bedfellows. And they're certainly bedfellows on anti-vaccination. But it's been Looney Tunes left and like Looney Tunes right have been really
come together.
Oh yeah, and so yeah, when they get all the way around and they hold hands.
Yes, that is what's happening.
I'm disappointed though. At least give me some 5G. Like I don't want to hear.
Oh, there's that too.
Oh, there is. Okay.
Oh, there's 5G involved also.
Oh, so it's like a multi-pronged attack.
Yes, if you can think of any sort of bizarre, like vague, there's invisible things killing us argument that is out there.
Right. Put on your tin hat.
It's addressed
and think
in
for a minute
in excess for 30 minutes in this
30
film.
Minutes though, like that's just bad marketing.
Well, I think it's actually like a clip from a film.
Oh,
like, I think there's more to this. I think I'm pretty
so
sure
this
is like
the
a trailer.
Thing. It's a 30 minute trailer. 30 minute These trailer. Are just the kind of people that would give you a 30 minute trailer.
But a lot of people have been sharing this. And so it's like also gotten to the point where like people are now posting, like, if you're sharing this, please unfriend me. Like, there's been a lot of that. But it's, like, it's getting to the point where, like, a lot of people are sort of, like, using it as a reason for, like, this whole thing being fake, that we should all just be going back outside, that the government is controlling all of us. it's like sort of hits at all of people's sort of like pre-existing conspiracies that they've already, it's like put a face and a story to like any insane thing that people have sort of like thought up themselves, basically.
Yeah.
And so, and it has also really given people like the power to sort of like think that they know, like,
yeah,
they now have all of the information that they need to have, like, from, it's this like video has like wrapped it up for them. Now they get it. Like, you know, they've been wondering what's going on for 8 weeks because they wouldn't listen to like science on television.
Right.
Right.
So now that there's pseudoscience on the internet that somebody shared with them, now they've got it.
When this is the chasm that opens when you have so much mixed messaging coming from the federal government about what's going on. Like, I've been saying this about almost anything. Like, I said this about the protests that people wanted to open up the government or open up the economy. Like, when, like, part of the failure here does really rest on all of us to some extent, because the reason there's like room for a discussion like this is because no one actually does have any fucking clue what's going on. And it does feel nerve-wracking and like disconcerting that like you get contradictory advice all the time. You're told masks don't do anything and you should definitely not wear them. And then the next week you get arrested if you don't wear them. And like this kind of poor marketing basically is like why, you know, we're in a situation where people are looking for something that seems logical to believe, even though it's like a crackpot craziness nonsense piece. Because there's almost, like, at this point, this is as credible as half of what the government has said, just in terms of how it's presented, because it seems like they at least know what they're talking about. They don't. It's crazy. But I mean, like, if you've been hearing the government sort of like scrounging around where like your federal government and your state government have different opinions about what's going on, your mayor right. doesn't agree with the governor, like
the president won't listen to the CDC guidelines, well, right. try to cover like, them up. And like,
of course, something like there's room for plenty of conspiracy theories, because what's more or less credible than what we've been hearing from official sources at this
right.
point?
We got told to drink bleach a couple weeks ago.
Exactly.
Inject bleach. Don't
inject.
Be
sorry,
fair to that moron. And also to somehow penetrate ourselves with UV light.
That's right.
Don't ask uh-huh. me how.
We were supposed to swallow or right. some other way wave a interior.
I was imagining like those weird boxes you put on your head for an eclipse that would in reverse to yeah. filter it into your mouth.
I was imagining they have these horrifying tests that they do called manometry tests, where they stick like a sensor all the way down your esophagus and like test your esophageal reactions or whatever. It's horrifying. But I was imagining just like a stick of UV light, like a sword swallower that we could just
like a stick like a glow down, stick down your
yeah,
esophagus.
Yeah, and they just stick down everyone's esophagus.
And they play like a nice house out. Beat while they do it, so that you at least yeah. feel jazzy,
clubby. Yeah.
I wonder though. Okay, so we've had 5G and we've had anti-vax. Like, what's the next thing that gets blamed for all of this?
Oh yeah.
I think it's HBO Max.
It's a specific guess, but I don't see why not.
I don't know. It seems like this has all been a rollout for a new streaming service that nobody asked for.
Right.
That is thinking they're going to make money by charging you for content you used to get for free elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
People want friends, man.
I know. And yeah, they like locked us inside for 3 months to get us to pay for the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah,
it's creative. It's more creative than a 5G conspiracy is all.
It is. Right. I like it. Let's yeah. push it.
Let's. Why not?
We'll make a video. Somebody get Ojai on the phone.
Exactly.
Ojai filmmaker.
Father/filmmaker.
Scored by Tampa Bay DJ. We've rounded out the crew.
Exactly.
Thank God we brought it back around to the Tampa Bay DJ.
Yes.
Because I had almost forgotten.
Well, that's the news for this week. Grant, thank you for joining us. Do you have anything that you
joining.
Would like to plug?
Thanks, guys. HBO Max, obviously.
Sure.
Yes.
And I also, in the midst of this chaos, also dropped a web series called Vicious Mannies, which you can find on YouTube.
Very fun.
Excellent. Yeah, Brent's seen it. I found out about it today.
So. I know. I realized. I was like, I should have told Lila about
it. I'll have a talk with my station about that. but it's really fun, and it stars Rex Lee from Entourage, who's very, very funny.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. We will be back next week with another 2-hour rant, most likely. I mean, nobody knows.
Yeah, how long was this one? Oh, not 2 hours.
Yeah, we came
it's like
in
an hour and 25 minutes.
Under 1:30.
Under 1:30.
That's a victory.
Our sweet
That's
spot.
A tight 125.
Victory in and
That's
of itself.
Victory exactly. more for our listeners than it is probably anyone.
But we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.